It's all about the sound. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina. Don't you wanna get down and dirty? It's Texas, I'm thirsty.
This is the SEC Spin.
SEC Spin.
With Jay Ruark and Brian Daniel.
Welcome back to the SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD. I'm BD, and alongside, as always, with co-host Jay Ruark. So, Jay, tell me about your week.
Oh, man. Well, started at my new office this week. It's been a little stressful. Closed on my first house last Monday. Started my new job this Monday. And it is interesting, to say the least.
Well, let's roll it back a little bit for those of us out there that may not know everything that's going on. So Jay Ruark and his girlfriend Candace have bought their first house, and they are building the house. And so over the past few days and weeks, this has been kind of an ongoing kind of ordeal here about it's been the annals of the Germantown, Nashville. So what was the most recent happening with this transition?
Well,
transition of transitions.
Well, so finally last Monday night, the night of my son's fourth birthday, we closed on the house.
And a birthday. Office move, house move, birthday.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep. A month. We were supposed to close back at the end of September. Builders had all kinds of issues, and so it got pushed back by a whole month. So it's been stressful, but we're glad to be in. It's coming together slowly but surely, but we're definitely glad to be in. So,
well, for those of us, and most of us have moved or new construction, coming together is not a given.
Well,
so the fact that it's coming together even slowly is a good thing. So it's something to rally around.
I got to be thankful. I mean, I've lived in an apartment now for 13 years straight. So to finally get out of the apartment, I've lived in some rough ones too. There were a couple apartments I think I would have been better off sleeping in my car, but finally in a house, and it feels good to have some room. It feels like it's really not that big of a house, but it feels like a mansion.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's about 2,000 square feet, so it's not really that big, but it feels gigantic.
Man, you're talking about rough places. My last semester at UK, you know how it works with a lot of us, right? So you have a roommate for 3 years, but then the transition year, whether it's the last semester or the last year, I had like five roommates in three or four different places. One of the last places we lived, we called the Lavagna. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know. I just remember that the word on the building had an L and a V and some vowels. I don't even know if that's what you say. But it was so bad, we had to go across the street to use the phone. They had a payphone across the street. We didn't even have a phone hookup. Downtown Lexington. And when we moved in, the fleas were so bad when we walked through there, and it was all wood. That's the amazing thing. You could feel the fleas jumping on you.
Oh.
Never, I cannot believe we ever moved in there, but I was desperate, and that's what we did. So we bombed the place, you know, with the flea bomb and thought they would take care of it, and I think it did for the hours that it took to get moved in. But that was, it was rough.
Well,
it's
yeah,
strong, powerful lessons, bro.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. I lived in a pretty rough one-bedroom my junior year of college. And I would bet you that carpet was there 12 years before I moved into that place, and I'd be willing to put money that it's still there. That carpet was disgusting.
Carpet.
Oh, it was awful.
Well, we are back with episode 9, season 2, after a week's hiatus, and I'm not going to apologize. That's the reason. I'm the reason that we did not convene last week. I happened to be in Laguna Beach, and I was fine with that. I just want everybody to know I was fine with it. It was ridiculously perfect, as it always is, but good to be back. This week we've got the Mark Rick watch that you and I have spent. We've texted back and forth, and we've talked about that. We want to get into that a little bit. There's the playoff picture. We're going to react to Tennessee-UK is one of the games that we'll look at. Vandy was at Houston. That was maybe a bit surprising. It was to me. Houston's not one of those teams I follow. We had Ole Miss at Auburn, UT Martin at Arkansas, Florida at Georgia, which is worth mentioning. And this week, for the first time, I have Week 10 storylines. I have a storyline for every team in the Southeastern Conference that I'm going to throw it at you for a couple of remarks.
Okay.
And then we'll preview Week 10 in the Southeastern Conference. Before we get started on all that, today or this week is our first, what are we calling that?
The playoff rankings.
The BCS playoff rankings. So let's get started here, and let's look at our top four, and let's get some thoughts on that.
So the top four, Clemson at number one, LSU at two, three Ohio State, four Alabama. Notable, the rest of the top ten there, Notre Dame at five, Baylor at 6, Michigan State at 7, TCU at 8, Iowa at 9, Florida at 10.
What jumps out at you right away?
Clemson being number one, I think is I know a lot of analysts picked that. I thought that was a little bit surprising, and I think Clemson has played well. They look good. I think they're a great team. I think they deserve to be in the top four right now. Have them at one, I think, is a little.
If it's not going to be Ohio State, I would go with LSU there.
I think I would put LSU there. I mean, they've got the nation's best player. Their defense is playing very well. I think LSU probably would be number one. I could see Clemson at maybe three. And then, you know, I think it's debatable for Alabama to be at four. But I also, too, I mean, I want to say that kudos to the committee, regardless of who your favorite team is, regardless of, you know, if you agree with the exact order that they have the teams in, I think they're doing some objective thinking. I think that that's very obvious. I think they look at Clemson right now as the hot team that Clemson, if they played anybody in the country, could beat. And maybe that's right. I'm not going to argue that. I think they think LSU is obviously very, very good and have taken the Leonard Fournette phenomenon into consideration. The fact that they don't have Ohio State at one really does make me feel good. And the fact that, and I know I'm an Ohio State hater, but what I'm saying is that team is having some problems. They've got JT, they, you know, started off with Cardale Jones at quarterback, moved Braxton Miller out to receiver. Then they decide they're going to start JT Barrett. He gets a DUI over the weekend. Now JT Barrett's suspended. Cardale Jones is back as a starter. Braxton Miller's now moved back to quarterback as the backup, and they haven't looked good, and they haven't beat a ranked team. So for them to just not put Ohio State at number one just because they're the defending national champions, I think really does speak some volumes. I think with Alabama at number four, I think a lot of people are being critical of the committee for putting them there. Not me. I think what it says is they've kind of – they are making the argument that I've made all year. Ole Miss game was a fluke. Bama has absolutely dominated other teams, and the Ole Miss, as bad as Alabama played, they were still right there at the very end with Ole Miss, and then we've kind of seen Ole Miss struggle in some games. So I really think that it's I think the committee is doing a good job, and I think they're doing what the committee is supposed to do, objective research and what the people want. The fact I know people are up in arms about Baylor at 6. Baylor doesn't have their starting quarterback. It would be the same, like I was telling you earlier, if Alabama loses Derrick Henry, you can't tell me that Alabama's a playoff team. They're just not. And if you, Baylor, their quarterback is their most important person. I know their best player is that receiver that they've got. I can't think of his name right now. But Baylor, without their starting quarterback, they are not a playoff contending team. I mean, there's no way lightning's going to strike twice and it's going to be Ohio State. They're going to be this year's Ohio State where they throw in a backup quarterback and they win the national championship. I just don't see that. Baylor's going to have to earn their way in. Now, if they went out, different ball game. But right now, I think it's right of the committee to put Baylor at 6 or just at least not in the top four just because they're undefeated. They do not have their starting quarterback.
I love the fact that there's no givens here. You know, the way polls have worked in my lifetime and really the way that they have always worked, I believe, is that you are in your position until you're beaten.
Yep.
And that's always bothered me because you have close games, other teams outperform you, even if it's not head-to-head. Someone beats a ranked team bad, they don't move up just because you may have squeaked by at home against an inferior opponent.
Right.
There's none of that going on here. A couple of things that jump out at me. One, if you're not going to put Ohio State one, and if they haven't beaten a ranked team, well, then why pick them over an unbeaten Michigan State team that has beaten a ranked team? Even though Oregon has fallen off a little bit, and we know that they're not the Oregon that we've seen the past few years, they're still better than anybody that Ohio State has played.
Yeah.
And they're unbeaten. So if you're not going to give Ohio State the benefit of the doubt, put them at number one, why make that call there? And then the other thing that I notice is Florida at 10 – They might be underrated a little bit in our conference. And I don't know why, like I've already said, why you don't put LSU at number one. How can Ohio State not have played a ranked team at this point in the season and be put this high in an objective poll?
Well, I think it gets back to the point of kind of what I was saying about Baylor. They looked at Baylor and said, can Baylor really be in the top four without their starting quarterback? I think they look at Ohio State and say, hey, look, Ohio State has everybody back from last year's national championship team. They've got arguably one of the top five players in Ezekiel Elliott. Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, Braxton Miller, all three of those guys have been great quarterbacks at one time in their Ohio State career. Cardale Jones, obviously, last year winning the national championship. JT Barrett beat out Braxton Miller to be the starter, was Big 12 or Big 10 player of the year. Braxton Miller's Big 10 player of the year twice. So, I mean, I think they're thinking, hey, Ohio State eventually might turn it on when they play other teams. So the argument you're making is right, but you can use that same argument right back against you in the fact that they are being – it's almost like they're stuck. Their objective in the fact they're not putting them at number one just because they're the defending national champions, but they're also not willing to put somebody else from that conference in until they're beaten. So, I'm okay with them at three, honestly. But I definitely see your point. But I'm okay with them at three. I think another thing needs to be pointed out is the fact that what they have done for the SEC, for what we're talking about here, they have set the SEC up yet again to play themselves out, not play themselves in. And I think last year showing that Ohio State played their way in and ended up winning the national championship, I think that's important. If LSU were to lose to Bama Saturday, Bama jumps up in the rankings. LSU is going to drop down. Somebody will leapfrog them. The committee proved that last year, that if you lose late, you're going to get leapfrogged. I mean, that they proved that. The only way that an SEC team then plays their way up into the playoff is if Florida wins out, Bama beats LSU, Florida-Alabama play in the SEC championship game, and Florida wins that. That's the only way an SEC school plays its way in. If LSU beats Alabama on Saturday, LSU, to me, is a lock. I don't see them losing to anybody else. I think the only game on their schedule that I think that they would lose is to Alabama, and I'm not even sure I feel that way. I think LSU they've already beaten Florida once. It's hard to beat a team twice, but they've already proven that they can do it. It's just an interesting scenario here, and that we have a situation where two SEC teams are in the top four. Most wouldn't have picked that. And I think it just sets it up for the SEC to possibly play their way out.
Well, I think the thing is set up so the SEC won't have multiple teams in. I think, could this whole thing be a construction of the LSU-Alabama rematch year? Even I wasn't looking forward to that game, and it was LSU-Alabama to me is like the Super Bowl of college football. Yeah. This year they're back. It's always good, but when both these teams come in like with these kinds of credentials, this is like bigger than big. But that national championship year during the rematch, that was not a good game.
It was terrible.
They left teams out that, you know, I really like seeing the conferences play each other in that game. I mean, great for the conference, but I think that sealed the – so I think a lot of this is set up so that we don't get two teams in.
Well, they've set it up for that. I mean, the game – it's okay. Just ironic that the game is this Saturday and the rankings come out and LSU and Alabama are both in there. So, I really don't have a problem with the rankings, and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that two SEC schools are in there, that I can really see some objective – rankings from the committee.
And for the first time ever in my life, I'm okay with Notre Dame being where they are. Most of the time, I think Notre Dame is way overhyped. I think when you look at that top 10, which if you just look through them real quickly, again, you've got Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame. So you look at the teams behind Notre Dame, Baylor, Michigan State, TCU, Iowa, and Florida. That seems right.
Yeah.
Usually Notre Dame, it's like they're really trying hard to get Notre Dame in a position where they can challenge. I think that's fair.
Well, and kudos to Notre Dame for losing their starting quarterback in Malik Zaire. And last year we had Tom Byrne on as kind of the wrap-up show to college football season after the playoff. He said he thought Notre Dame going into next year was going to be really tough to beat with Malik Zaire and the people they had coming back. Zaire was off to a great start. It was very unfortunate that he got hurt, but Notre Dame has rebounded very nicely.
Okay, so this is not the last time that we're going to be talking about this particular poll as we move forward, and next week we're going to see a shakeup because LSU and Alabama are on tap.
And there will be
a change in that top four.
Florida State, Clemson play Saturday too.
Florida State and Clemson also up. So you and I have exchanged several texts over the last week, particularly since the Florida-Georgia game. This has been brewing for a while. So Georgia, we did not have a show last week. after the Georgia loss in Knoxville. So then they go to the world's largest cocktail party in Jacksonville. Georgia coming off a loss. Florida, I haven't been really sold on them all year long. They just keep winning games. They do it convincingly. And, you know, they lose their quarterback, and Florida smokes them 27-3. And I don't even know if it was that close. Georgia was never really in this game. And Rick made some questionable decisions, and questionable is putting it really mildly, at the quarterback position.
You know, drastic decision.
Nick Chubb goes out. So the loss of Chubb, but they've got running backs. They have, Sonia Michelle.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to Marshall, but Marshall was a guy that I was big on the preseason. They've got talent. It's not like they just have to abandon the running game, but Rick makes the decision to put in a dual threat quarterback for this game. This is a must-win game. Was a must-win game.
Well, number one, let's break down the decision-making by Mark Rick. I mean, you are a Georgia fan by all means, and that's fine. But my opinion on Grayson Lambert is that he has played more consistently and more effectively than Hudson Mason did last year. And at no point last year do I recall Rick pulling Hudson Mason, especially going into a big game. You know, you're going into the Georgia-Florida, your big rivalry game of the year. I mean, this is like they don't even play each other in each other's stadium, and they have a mutual site for this game. Why pull your starting quarterback who has played pretty well throughout the season and start your third string quarterback out of nowhere?
Well, he threw a nice ball against Tennessee that got dropped.
Yeah.
It would have tied the game.
Exactly.
And who knows what happened.
One of the most beautiful passes of the season.
Yeah.
The only reason, and the reasoning that came out that Rick started him is because he thought he could be more of an effective runner, like Joshua Dobbs was against that Florida defense. That makes no sense. You are Georgia. You have a barn full.
Unless it works.
Well, but he hasn't played. I mean, yet you're third string quarterback. You're playing against a third string defense. I mean, maybe he looks good running around in practice. I don't know, but you're Georgia. You have running backs. And you're Georgia. You were picked to win the SEC. It's like he wasn't even confident enough in his own team and his own scheme to really to think he could go out and beat Florida. I mean, it was almost like he was scared. So he makes a drastic decision, puts his third string quarterback as a starter. Grayson Lambert doesn't even, after he threw his fourth pick, Grayson Lambert still didn't warm up. Fourth pick. He then pulls his punter, puts his second string quarterback at the punter to set up some possible fake punt that he never ran. So, I mean, the decision-making by Rick, even if the game was close, it could still be questioned. I mean, the only way those moves would have been proven genius is if they come out and they blow Florida out. Even if they lose close, it's still, well, maybe you would have won with Grayson Lambert. I really just don't get what he was thinking there.
All right, so here's the deal. Right now they're 5-3. They've got wins against Louisiana Monroe, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Southern. So they beat a whole region, right? They beat like 13 states in that game.
Amazing.
The loss to Alabama, which is really two losses or three. It's multiple losses. The loss to Tennessee is two in a row. And then that game against Missouri, which was just weird. It was like, was it 9-6?
9-6.
And then the bad loss to Florida. So four games remaining. They host Kentucky. They're at Auburn. They host Georgia Southern. They're at Georgia Tech. So they're sitting at 5-3 now. So if they win out, what does that put them at? 8-9? That puts them at 9-3. So they cannot. So a 10-win season is possible with a bowl win. All right. When we're exchanging text, you said that is unacceptable at Georgia because, you know, they expected in a weak SEC East, they expected to be playing for the SEC East, not a 9-win season. And how did I respond?
Well, that maybe the expectation wasn't that the SEC East, it was the national championship,
yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And that's a great point that you brought up. Georgia hasn't won the SEC East since 2005. So you think about that. We're 10 years removed from Georgia's last SEC championship, excuse me, our last SEC championship was 2005. We are 10 years removed from that.
But only 2 years from the Alabama game that they could have won and maybe should have won.
3 years. Sort
of 3 years. It would have been an SEC championship as well. That's fresh on the collective minds of Georgia. So not only do you have those expectations coming into this year, you feel like you are justified in those expectations.
Well, but on the flip side of that, it's also the last 3 years Georgia has had at least a top 10 recruiting class. Actually, the last 5-6 years, they've had at least a top 10 recruiting class. The last 3 years, they've been picked to win the SEC East, and not one of those years did they go to Atlanta. Not one.
So who does the 2015 Georgia Bulldog team remind you of?
The 2014 Georgia Bulldog.
And the 2014 Georgia Bulldog.
2013 Georgia Bulldog.
Right, I'm sorry. So the Georgia just reminds you of Georgia, right?
Georgia, the season. I mean, there's just no...
Where does that leave us with Coach Mark Richt
here? I think Mark Richt is a great guy. I think Mark Richt is a great coach. And I think on paper, there's probably only a couple other coaches in front of him. But I think it's just come to time to part ways. And I think, honestly, I think it would be good for Richt, too. I mean, I really do. I think Richt will, if he decides to keep coaching, there'll be everybody in the country beating his door down, except Ohio State and Alabama. I think any program would love to have him. But I just really think that it's just come time. I mean, for those Kentucky fans that think back to Tubby Smith and his time in Lexington, Tubby did some great things. Tubby, we had, you know, he had record winning seasons in the conference. We had Elite Eight appearances. We had one national championship.
Not a failure.
But it got that there at the end, those last losses. Couple years, it got to the point where it was like, you know what? Tubby is good for the SEC comparatively. Tubby is good in college basketball comparatively. But we're going into these seasons thinking we're going to be this, and we're not that. We're not even close. I mean, Georgia has gotten absolutely blown out in two games. The two big games on the, well, one was on their big game on the schedule. The other, they were picked at the beginning of the season to not even be a ball game, and they only put up 3 points and got blown out. Now, yes, I do understand that he lost Nick Chubb to an injury, but that's no excuse at Georgia.
It happens.
It happened. You know, it happened to Todd Gurley. I get that, but the point is, and I'm not even hating on Mark Richt. I'm simply saying I think it's just time for them to part ways and just start fresh. And especially the heat that is on Georgia and on the AD when you look down the road in Gainesville. And McElwain comes in his first year, and he's going to win the – I mean, he is – all they have to do is beat Vanderbilt on Saturday, and they are a lock to win the East.
Yeah, I saw that coming.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Well, I tell you, the biggest difference between Tubby Smith and Mark Richt that I see, one of the differences is I remember going into the NCAA tournament with Tubby at coach the last several years that he was there. There was no chance Kentucky was going to win the national championship. The equivalent for the college football season is the preseason. Georgia feels like every year they're contending. So Richt has put them in a position to where every year they're contending. That means something. There's excitement there. There's optimism before the season. And not the kind of optimism that's in Lexington football season. It's like, hey, you know, we could make a bowl this year. They really feel like they've got the horses every year. That's attributable to Richt. So what I fire – I mean, this is the question is, he's middling right now. When you compare him to Georgia, the expectations in Athens. He's not middling if you compare it to Kentucky football or Vanderbilt football or some of the other ones around the league. In fact, he's really good. That same could be said for Smith. So when you average anywhere between 8 to 10 wins a year and you come in every season, you feel like you've got a chance – couple of injuries, last 2 years, injuries, and you're right. But those are significant injuries. Chubb and Gurley, look at what Gurley's doing with the Rams now. Doesn't he have more yards in those games than anybody in the history?
Yeah.
Big loss. And he was a special teams contributor as well. You're right. At Georgia, you should be able, and they do have people to step in, but not at that level. I think the thing that I have told you that may get Rick is his inability to have consistently at the quarterback situation. And when we were texting back and forth, you know, you got mad at me because I kept saying, yeah, I was waffling on it. But really, I was looking for the reasons that if you're the Georgia AD, you might say, I'm going to give you one more year. And one of those reasons may be is they have the five-star quarterback Jacob Eason coming in next year. And Rick may say, look, I got my guy coming in next year. Give me one more year. I've got Schottenheimer and Pruitt that are new in their positions on the staff. One more year with my guy at quarterback. You know we can run. Give Pruitt a chance with the defense. And that may get it done. It may. I'm not saying it will. But if you were going to keep him, that would be a reason. The answer is, I don't know. If he finishes 9-3, wins a bowl game, do you still fire him? Those losses were bad. I got to give you that. Alabama, they were actually favored. We talked about it on the show. It was the first time Alabama had not been favored in, like, since 1961 is what it felt like.
Yeah, seriously.
But the Florida game is even worse because that's a rookie coach, neutral site, rivalry game, and you're a no-show.
Yeah, it wasn't even a game. Okay, you know, if for some reason, if Georgia were to win out, here's the problem with that. I just don't, the way Georgia is playing, I don't see them winning out.
It's heartless.
The only way that Rick stays is if they win out and they play a bowl. Now, if they go 9-3 out of the SEC, finish second in the SEC East, then they're going to get a pretty tough bowl contender. Yeah. And then you got to say, well, okay, they finished out the SEC East and they beat Georgia Tech. What's going to happen now? If they go to that bowl game, that's going to make or break the decision right there. If they do it, if they go and play, I'm just going to throw a team out there. Let's say they go and play a Florida State who's going to finish, who could potentially finish, you know, three or
Memphis.
Three. Ooh, don't want to play Memphis. If they played like a third team out of the ACC and let's call it Florida State, if they go into that game and they get blown out, he's done. The only way that he stays is if they go 9-3 to finish the regular season, he goes to a bowl game and he beats somebody that's ranked, that's a decent team, and beats them. That's the only way he stays. And I think he deserves to stay at that point. If he's bringing in that guy and then Chubb's going to come back, okay. But then that's his going out. He either is going to do it with that or he's not, and then it's over. And I think with this Eason kid and with Chubb, I mean, this is going to be – that would be his going out party. I mean, win, loser, draw. He just doesn't even seem like he wants to be there right now. He just seems kind of – I don't know. I mean, I just don't see him too upset or too excited about anything. And the fact that he made the crazy moves on Saturday, I mean, if you think back to Tubby's last time in Lexington, Tubby was constantly recruiting those guys for his system. They were playing his style, his system. The knock on him was, well, you're not bringing in the number one recruits. He finally gives in, brings in the number one recruits, and basically just says, watch what happens. And that crumbled, completely crumbled, and it was almost like he threw deuces to everybody and said, told you, I did it your way, I'm out. And, I felt like that was kind of what Rick did. I mean, he just throws in his third-string quarterback to start, throws four picks, doesn't even warm up his starter, puts his second-string quarterback at punt for a quote, fake punt play that he never runs. I don't know. That just felt really weird that he – all those decisions all in one, especially the Georgia-Florida game.
All right, so they've got three – we got to move on. But they've got three conference losses, right?
Yeah.
How many conference losses does UT have right now? Alabama, Florida. Is that it?
Arkansas.
And Arkansas. But they've got the head-to-head over Georgia.
Yeah.
And Tennessee's November schedule is usually – they win those November games. They got Vanderbilt and Kentucky and Missouri.
Yeah.
So SEC East second place is not a given.
No, it's not at all.
So you finish third, you get the upside is you get an easier bowl. So if they went out and then they win their bowl, I can't disagree with that. And the ultimate trump card here is if he loses the team.
Well,
could happen.
Well, and if Saturday, for some reason, which I don't think is going to happen, but if for some reason Kentucky goes down there and beats Georgia in Athens with the way Georgia played against Missouri, he might not make it to Monday.
I mean, Kentucky is like Russian roulette. You never know what you're going to get.
Do you hear the harps?
They're coming. They're coming. Kentucky at Athens. All right, let's move on here. You're listening to SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD, and we're going to move on with our Week 10 storyline. So, Jay, this is the point of the show. When I'm going to give you a storyline, and you give me a couple of, just a little bit of a reaction to it, and just tell me what you think.
Just a little bit? I can only give a little bit?
Well, we are pushed for time.
Okay.
I've been told by our listeners that sometimes we go a little long.
Okay.
So, but
I like how you put that nicely on me.
The Mark Richt story is, I think that is something, that is an interesting story. He's the dean of SEC coaches right now, right? No one's been
15 years.
No one's been anywhere longer than he has.
15 years.
All right, Week 10 storylines. Here we go. Storyline number one, the LSU game will make or break Crimson Tide's season.
Absolutely. Because if Alabama...
The point is moot. No, sorry.
If Alabama wins this game, they're in the driver's seat, and it's not even close. They're going to win out easily. LSU will dominate Ole Miss, I think, and that puts Bama in the SEC title game. They're already in the top four. They then are going. I think they're going to beat whoever. I think whoever plays from the West is going to beat Florida in the East. So it definitely makes a race Crimson Tide season. If they lose that game, I still think Alabama wins out. And I think Bama will get a really good bowl game.
So Jay, they're at Mississippi State, Charleston Southern, and then at Auburn.
They're gonna blow all three teams out.
You figured that they'll win out. So this is the game. If they lose here, that's two losses, and that puts them on just way. I mean, right now they're on thin ice in the top four, so that second loss, it'd be really tough to overcome that.
Yep.
Headline number two. Can the Razorbacks find their way to bowl eligibility in November?
Absolutely. I mean, you think about how Arkansas turned their season around late last year. They can definitely do that this year. If they were to beat Ole Miss this weekend, they then are taking out the number one team in the West. I mean, technically, Ole Miss still technically controls its own destiny, which I don't think is going to end up happening. But if Arkansas could win that game, I don't think they're going to beat LSU, but they've now put themselves in a position to finish out the season on a decent note. And then I think Arkansas, I think it would be interesting to watch them in a bowl game. I think if they get to a bowl game and they beat teams like, you know, Ole Miss and Tennessee, and then they go into a bowl game, I mean, they obviously have talent there. I'm not a Bulema guy, but they obviously have talent. And then they can go in and win a decent bowl game and finish the season nicely.
You know how many wins they've got?
Four.
So they're sitting at four.
I think they're 4-4, aren't they?
That sounds right. So they've got Ole Miss this week. They're coming off a pretty big win on Tennessee Martin. So there you go. They've got at Ole Miss, at LSU, Mississippi State at home, in Missouri. So they need two wins.
They could beat Ole Miss and they could beat Missouri. Mississippi State
at home.
That's a little bit different ballgame. Mississippi State's defense is not that strong. They're definitely not going to beat LSU at LSU. There's no way.
So they get to six and they're bowl eligible. What does that say for their season? You happy in Fayetteville?
No, you're drastically disappointed. Arkansas was a preseason teen. In the teens, I think, and then they actually worked their way up into the top 10, I'm pretty sure. And the devastating losses to Toledo, was it Toledo? And then who else did they? There was another bad, bad loss.
Was it Texas Tech?
Yes, Texas Tech blew them out. So Texas Tech, you lose to Texas Tech and Toledo, and then you go and finish 7-6. That's if they win their bowl game. I'm not happy if I'm at Arkansas with the again, we're getting into preseason expectations. Now, Bulema was brought in from Wisconsin. He was doing 10-win seasons at Wisconsin. He was going to come in and do all this. Especially the way Arkansas ended think about how Arkansas ends the season last year. They ended the season pretty strong, and they were playing with everybody. I think they lost to Alabama by 1 point. They played LSU. They played really well to end the season. So when you end the season and you're pretty much bringing everybody back, your expectations are a little higher. I think you're definitely disappointed if you're an Arkansas fan.
Next storyline. Same thing for Auburn. Can Auburn, who's sitting at 4-4, find its way to bowl eligibility in November? So Auburn's at Texas A&M this week. They host Georgia. Well, actually, they end with three straight home games: Georgia, Idaho, and Alabama.
It's definitely possible. I think their two best case scenarios are Idaho and in Georgia. Idaho and Georgia. Yeah, seriously. Idaho and Georgia, their two best opportunities to get to bowl eligibility. Honestly, it wouldn't shock me if Auburn doesn't go to a bowl this year. But talk about the biggest drop in expectation would be Auburn. I mean, there's no doubt. Preseason number six, Malzahn, Muschamp, combination there. And for them to not go to a bowl would be the biggest disappointment of the conference.
Next storyline, it is time to finish the job on this SEC East title. This is your Gators, yours and mine, actually. Actually, that's not true. The Florida Gators.
Florida's going to absolutely
7-1.
They're going to blow Vandy out. They're going to go to 8-1. I actually think Florida is going to win out. And I think they're going to go into the SEC championship game with one loss.
So not only is Florida more than likely going to wrap the SEC East this week, which is a big surprise, they're going to do it in the first week of November.
Yeah.
At Vanderbilt. Yeah. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. And another reason, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but another reason why, you know, the Dog Nation, you know, has reason to be upset. This is a team that was not projected to be here. I think you and I picked a middle of the pack. I think I went higher than you by one in the SEC East, but only because it was Florida. I mean, yeah. There was no other reason. So they've got Vanderbilt this week. They're at South Carolina. You figure that's a win. Florida Atlantic the next weekend is a win, and then Florida State. So, worst case, they're probably sitting at two losses.
Yeah. I mean, there's nobody. The only team that's even going to compete with them and that could beat them would be Florida State. There's no doubt in my mind. Just what a job McElwain has done. I mean, that is just impressive. If he doesn't win Coach of the Year, I don't know who's going to win. I mean, it's impressive.
And the East has been wide open for the taking, and he's done it.
Yeah.
Yep, you're right. We've already talked about this. Storyline in Athens, of course, is will Mark Richt survive the season? I say yes, he survives the season. I just can't imagine him losing the team to the extent. And honestly, I think they owe it to him to let him finish the season.
Yeah, I really don't see a scenario in which they fire him during the season. Unless they lost to Kentucky on Saturday, it's the only point.
That's a good point.
That's the only – yeah, I mean, if he loses to Kentucky on Saturday, Mark Richt may not make it to Monday. But in the event that they beat Kentucky, I think they let him finish the season just to let him – give him that to do it, and then the decision would be made, yeah.
Next storyline. Are the Kentucky Wildcats setting fans up for another disappointing fade this season?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No question.
Come on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even have any comments on it. Well, actually, I do. Tolles' decision making is absolutely beyond me. My granddad was sitting here today at lunch trying to tell me that it's not Tolles' fault.
He doesn't have time.
And I said, obviously, you had the same conversation with him, too. And I just didn't even argue with him because if you know my granddad, it's not even worth arguing. But I'm having a really hard time figuring out what Stoops is. We have proven that at special teams, we are terrible under Stoops on special teams. We gave up the double down with the punt return and kick return to Tennessee on Saturday. So and he fired a special teams coordinator from last year, hired a new one. We've proven that special teams aren't our thing. We've proven that offense isn't our thing because we were going to be this air raid offense.
Yeah, you got air raid still.
Well, yeah.
It's air raid.
Errant raid. The offense is just unbelievable. The decision making that goes into the offense, the play calling, that's not his thing. He was supposed to be this defensive guru. We gave up 250 yards in the first half to Tennessee. We made the freshman quarterback from Auburn look like a Heisman Trophy candidate in the game we played against him. He threw for 150 yards in the first quarter of that game. The defense is getting gashed. Dak Prescott ran over us like we were a JV squad. The defense, to me, which is supposed to be his specialty, is not. I mean, we're giving up a ton of yards. So I'm really just trying to figure out what is it that Stoops is supposed to be good. I mean, everybody's talking about Yahtzee and all these players he's bringing in. You know, this Drew Barker kid, and I know people are calling for him. He's obviously a pretty big punk. I mean, and I think we've talked about that. If he wasn't a punk, then he was way overrated out of high school. or he would have gotten some playing time, because Tolles has played really bad. I mean, he played really bad against Tennessee, and at some point in the second half, you bring him in and see what he can do. But I know that he didn't practice the week before, but my God, apparently he was healthy enough to play on Saturday. You do something, you try it. I will give him the fact that Boone Williams got hurt. That never helps anything. Boone Williams, my favorite player. But Kentucky is just, it just kills me. Tolles, his decision making, and Stoops, I'm just not real sure what he's accomplishing. I mean, I know that everybody's excited about him, but I don't see any, this is back to back years. The team has regressed from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. I mean, we literally look like we're going backwards for the second year in a row. After the first year of two wins, I mean, we're starting off the year. We started off 5-1 last year, didn't go to a bowl. Started off 4-2 this year, and dang near should have been 5-1 and beat Florida.
With two conference wins in your first four games.
Exactly. And now here we are. We're just backtracking. I mean, there's no reason that we should have lost. Okay, Tennessee covers the spread against us. Fine. 10 points was a spread. Fine. To get beat by 31 points, I mean, that's just unacceptable. It's just not acceptable.
It wasn't that close.
And it wasn't even that close. It's just not acceptable. Yeah. So, Kentucky to me is Stoops. I don't know who the guy is for Kentucky, and there may not ever be a guy for Kentucky, but Stoops is really not impressing me. I mean, for all the hype that's going on about him, it's not impressive. And Tolles was more worried about his hair than he is his decision making. He's a gunslinger, like you said. That's all it is.
Well, Stoops is what you got.
Yeah.
He's what you got. When you're in Kentucky, it's not like a Georgia situation or a Florida situation. It's not working. You fire the guy. You try again because your job's appealing. When you go through the coaching search at Kentucky, your guy is who you got. It's got to be minimally 5 years to give the guy a chance, because more than likely the guy coming in doesn't have a lot of momentum. So you got two models to pick from. You can go the Howell Mummy model, or you can do the Rich Brooks model. Rich Brooks, I didn't like that hire, but it worked. And Kentucky football was the best under Brooks that it has been in, 20 years, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So they go there. They go with the older guy, for stability. I still think I would have gone with young enthusiasm, knowing he's going to be there for 3 or 4 years and he's going to move on to a better job, but he's going to leave it better than what he came. I think that's a lower risk then go in the Stoops direction. But that doesn't matter, Jay. Doesn't matter. Stoops is what you got. So at least for another 2 or 3 years, he's got to get his chance.
I think the Stoops has 2 years after this season to really make.
Maybe.
To win some games. But the problem is Tennessee and Florida only getting better, obviously. Georgia is going to be Georgia.
So what's changed?
Yeah. I mean, nothing is going to change.
But that's always going to be the case. I mean, to his advantage, Tennessee and Georgia are not what they traditionally are. So you've still got a shot.
But he still didn't beat them, though.
Well,
that's my point. That's my point. I mean, he could beat Georgia on Saturday, but he still hasn't. So, I mean, that's my whole...
I'm just saying, when you're in Lexington, you can't do the carousel. You got to get your guy, and you got to give him... You really have to suffer it out to make sure... Because you can't just keep rebooting that thing. You can't. So, some of those other places, you just reload. Even at UT, look at the facilities. Look at the stadium. Look at the fans. Look at the tradition. It doesn't work. Yeah, give somebody another shot. Dooley's not working out. 3 years, we'll try somebody else. You can't do that at Kentucky. I think he's what you got.
Fair enough.
Curse of the Bear Bryant.
That's what they say. Next headline. The path to an SEC West title gets a whole lot easier if the Tigers can beat Alabama.
Well, if they beat Alabama, I think it's a lock. I mean, it's over.
Do they control their own destiny then?
Yes, because they then have to
play. They host Ole Miss?
They host Ole Miss. But, I mean, they ended their last three games of the season, I think, the last three games, I think, include Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas A&M, I do believe. Well, if they beat Arkansas, there's no doubt, really, in my mind. LSU, at that point, controls their own destiny. All they have to do is they had to beat Ole Miss. There's no doubt. They go to Ole Miss. They go to Oxford. I don't think that's going to be a problem. They have Arkansas and Texas A&M come to their place. I don't think either one of those teams can play and beat LSU, especially stop Leonard. I mean, if Leonard Fournette stays healthy, I don't know. I don't know who can stop him. I mean, I think his toughest match is going to be this weekend against Nick Saban and Alabama, because Nick Saban has proven he can stop the run. Can't stop a running quarterback very well. That's where he struggles, a scrambling guy. But, man, he can stop the run. They can load that box. But, again, Leonard Fournette is having one of those seasons that we may be telling our grandkids about, like, you know, like we hear about Herschel Walker and Bo Jackson. I mean, that's serious. I mean, he is seriously having one of those years, and I hope he stays healthy. I hope nothing happens to him like that. Just for the fact of the matter, I want to see what happens. But LSU definitely is in the driver's seat right now. If they beat Alabama Saturday, I don't see anybody else knocking them off.
Well, producer Jeff's boy, Wisenhunt, got fired because he let J.J. Watt beat him. So Saban is going to be ramped up to start Leonard Fournette. So it's going to have to be Brandon Harris, or Fournette is going to move into mythic, epic levels if he's able to beat the Alabama defense.
Well, again, and I've said this multiple times on the show, go back to 2011. Alabama ends up winning the national championship that season with A.J. McCarron, with that group of guys that beat LSU in the rematch in the Superdome down in New Orleans for the national championship game. But that LSU-Alabama game, that LSU team, nothing compared to this LSU team, in my opinion. And I would argue that with any LSU fan. There's no way. Brandon Harris has done exactly what Brandon Harris needed to do, and it's 10 times what Jordan Jefferson was doing. And they didn't have Leonard Fournette on that team. So the point, and LSU goes into Tuscaloosa and beats Nick Saban in Alabama. And granted, it was an overtime ugly 9-6 game. But the point is this LSU team is better than that LSU team. There's no reason this LSU team can't win out and can't go play for a national championship. But if there's a team that could beat them, it's Alabama. Alabama.
How will the Mississippi State Bulldogs perform in a midweek game in unfamiliar territory? They're at Missouri.
They're going to blow Missouri out.
Blow them out.
They're going to absolutely blow Missouri out. Dak Prescott is going to just – the thing about it is Mizzou's good at rushing off the edge. Dak Prescott's good at running up the middle, so I think that they're not going to. I don't see anybody fooling Dak Prescott here. I think they're going to go to Mizzou, and I'll actually be in Kansas City with a bunch of Mizzou grads cheering on Mississippi State. I'll be in a wedding weekend this weekend, and they're all big Mizzou fans, so I'll be cheering hard for the Bulldogs to win.
Missouri. This is the storyline at the University of Missouri with Matty Malk out of the picture. Is there any hope for the offense in 2015?
No. I mean, when your quarterback
is
selling
coke. That is the correct answer. Well, flashback to Mad J Jeopardy.
Yeah, well,
it is no.
No. The answer is no. When your quarterback gets kicked off the team or suspended or whatever for selling cocaine on camp, I mean, it's just unreal. There's just no chance for the Mizzou offense. I mean, they have looked terrible.
All right. University of Mississippi, otherwise known as Ole Miss, is hosting Arkansas this week. Can the Rebels turn their game against Arkansas into a track meet? Because that's what they're going to be trying to do.
Yes, they can. I mean, I think if anything, Arkansas has proven that they can give up a lot of yards and a lot of points. I mean, even ask University of Tennessee Martin. I know Arkansas won that game by 30-something points, but Tennessee Martin scored a lot of points and put up a lot of yards on them. And Ole Miss has a lot of talent. I think Chad Kelly is a good quarterback. I think he can put in Treadwell, the first wide receiver, with four straight games, 100 yards or more.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is going to turn this game into a track meet. I think Ole Miss wins this game.
Jeff Treadwell, Laquan Treadwell reminds me of who's Jeff? Oh, he played for the Braves, didn't he? Hey, it happens. Laquan Treadwell reminds me of A.J. Green when you watch him play.
Yeah.
He's broader than what you think, but when you see him running, he looks narrow. He looks more slight of build, but he's a big
run.
Dude.
He can run.
He's fun to watch. And, you know, I think early in the season, he had not fully recovered or at least gotten into game shape injury.
But he's at his A game now.
All right, South Carolina storyline. Are the Gamecocks going to win another game against an FBS opponent this season?
What's their remaining schedule?
At Tennessee, they host Florida, the Citadel at home, and then Clemson.
Nope. They're going to end the season with that Citadel win. They're just not going into Tennessee and winning that game. Florida will absolutely dismantle them. Clemson's the number one team in the nation, according to the committee. They're definitely not beating Clemson's out. You know, but again, for South Carolina fans, appreciate what you had with Spurrier. Appreciate the run that you had. And I think the South Carolina job is going to actually get more attention than it ever would had Spurrier not gone there. And I really think South Carolina is going to get a decent coach. And I think South Carolina does have some talent to work with there. I think you can recruit to South Carolina. And I think Spurrier has proven that. And I think South Carolina will be back. I don't think they're going to be a contender, but I think they'll be back and a tough team to play.
Next headline, can the Vols win out? They've got South Carolina this weekend at home, North Texas at home, at Missouri. That's the big game there. They haven't beat Missouri since Missouri's joined the conference, and then they host Vanderbilt. So three home games, and then they travel to Missouri.
Well, here's the thing for Tennessee. Either Tennessee wins out and they end the season at 8-4 and they go to a bowl game and go to 9-4, and the season you can call not a success, but you can also not call it a failure. At this point, though, if Tennessee loses one of these games to teams that are just reeling, you can definitely call the season a failure. And then Butch Jones's seat starts to get a little hotter. You're Tennessee. You have to win these games. There's number one. You're at Tennessee. You're not expected to go 8-4, but now you're at the point where we have to win out to get to 8-4. You better win out. I mean, and again, it's Vandy, South Carolina, and Mizzou. The next worst team is Kentucky, and you just blew them out. So you have to win these games.
They've got momentum on their side. Next headline, is Kyle Murray the long-term answer at Texas A&M?
I think he might be. I mean, you think about – we always talk about that system, and whether we're talking about New England Patriots and Tom Brady or we're talking about Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M, he looked every bit the part. The only other quarterback to have his first start and go 200 yards passing and 100 yards rushing in his first start, that guy's name was Cam Newton. So Kyle Murray did it on Saturday. Pretty impressive athlete, fast, looked good throwing the ball. Again, Texas A&M was the most successful when they had Johnny Manziel, and so Johnny Manziel did those things. So this might be the guy. I mean, he looked really good on Saturday.
Last storyline, has the Commodore offense hit rock bottom?
I never thought the Commodore offense was that great to begin with. I mean, I'm not even being critical because no. I really do think their defense is phenomenal, and I give their defense respect. I think Derek Mason did make some positive strides from last year to this year. They're definitely a better team. I don't know. I don't think they really have a quarterback, and I just don't feel like they have a lot of playmakers. I know everybody talks about their tight ends. I really don't see a great running game. I don't see anybody on the outside that can really hurt you. It's easy to take away the tight ends if you don't have anybody outside and don't have a running game. And when you have a lackluster quarterback, you can't help but your offense kind of be dismantled. But pretty bad when you don't score any points on Houston. I thought Houston would win that game. But when you don't even score, that's bad.
Rock bottom.
Rock bottom.
Maybe rock bottom.
Yep.
Alex, what is yes?
Jay Cutler will probably be looking for a job. Maybe he's got another year of eligibility after this season.
He and Wisenhunt ought to share a moving truck.
Yeah.
Producer Jeff, ladies and gentlemen, with the Wisenhunt reference, who just was relieved. That was on the crawler this morning, was relieved of his duties. That's going to wrap it up for Week 10 Storylines. What did you think about that segment? Does that work for you?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's just a quick hit, right?
Yeah.
Just go through all the teams.
Do it. I like it.
I completely ripped those off. Football down south. So good. I think your reactions was better than theirs, though. All right. So that's something maybe we'll bring back. Hey, one other word about the Kentucky-Tennessee game, which we didn't react. We didn't spend a lot of time. Actually, didn't spend any time reacting to last week. Just a rundown. Texas A&M beat South Carolina. You mentioned Houston beating Vanderbilt. Rick gets a lot of the conversation, rightfully so. Where's Mason in this coaching conversation? I mean, there's got to be some talk there. He's like, I think my position with Kentucky kind of applies to Vanderbilt. You can't just keep rolling guys through there unless it's just bad.
Well, the one thing that he's going to be able to argue is that they got better from last year to this year. Kentucky doesn't really have that argument. going for them right now. If Vanderbilt can pull off one of these last – a conference win in one of these last games, there's no way he's not safe. I honestly don't think if Vanderbilt – even if Vanderbilt loses out, I don't think he gets fired. I mean, because he can make that argument that we got better, and they did, and I will definitely back him up on that. They've got to figure out something on offense. I mean, they've got to bring somebody in that can really help them. They've got to have something going in recruiting this year, and I would have to look and see what they've got coming in. They've got to have something like that. I think Vanderbilt is a place that you can be successful at. I mean, James Franklin proved that. But I think, too, I mean, if I was a kid and I had aspirations coming out of high school and I was a pretty motivated guy – and Vanderbilt's recruiting me. I mean, you're going to go look at Vanderbilt because it's Vanderbilt, right? I mean, regardless if you're just wanting to go play sports or whatever, I mean, that's like, dang, that's basically an Ivy League school that's in the SEC. I want to go check that out. You're at least going to go look at that. That's a great education. Whatever happens to you, you're going to leave there with pretty expensive education. So I think it can be – I think Vanderbilt can – there's a place – that they can be competitive at. Now, are they going to win a national championship? No, I don't see that happening. But they can definitely be competitive. I just don't see Mason getting fired after this year. Had they come out and completely dogged it like they did last year, he's probably out the door. He may even be fired already, but they've definitely shown improvement, and anybody can see that.
And then Ole Miss goes into Auburn and wins for the first time in a few years, 27-19. But on that Kentucky game, Kentucky went ahead 14-10. I actually had the TV muted, and my wife was in another room. She was working a jigsaw puzzle. She doesn't like to watch football. And so we went up 14-10. There was, what, like 2.5, 3 minutes left in the half, and I thought, you know, this could be a game. I don't know how I felt about our chances. I've watched Kentucky long enough to know that no lead is safe at any time in the game. All right. So it's like, yeah, it could be close. So go into the room, put a few pieces of the puzzle in, just to contribute there. I'm not real good at that. In fact, I went and I looked at the box, and I told her, I said, I think we're missing some pieces. and then I went back like a couple of minutes later, and it was 41-14.
Yeah, it happened.
I mean, that's how fast that happened.
It happened quick. And I've got a great story for you. I went to I started watching the game. My son was taking a nap, and this was the first Halloween that he really wanted to trick or treat. Right, I mean, this is the first time he really knew what was going on. He wanted to be an elephant. He wanted me to be a monkey. Okay, so we decided we ordered outfits off Amazon. I look like a ridiculous monkey. He looked like a cute elephant. That's usually how it goes. I watch up until Kentucky scores there, and it's 14-10 with, you know, about 5 minutes left in the second quarter. I'm pretty hyped. I pause it. He's ready to go. We go over to Salem Town where they're having this Halloween thing. It's kind of blocked off. Go do that. We trick or treat for the first time. He's pretty excited. They have some food trucks. We go get some food trucks. I've got my phone turned off. He then looks at me, says, Dad, I want to take my elephant outfit off. I take it off. He starts dancing to his favorite song that's playing on the speaker that they got. And he looks at me and he goes, uh-oh. And I go, what? And he goes, I poop. So I go pick him up, and he's not even pooped. He's diarrheaed himself. It's down into his shoes. I pick him up. I have to run 2 blocks to the car. I've got poop all over me, right, in the monkey costume, thank goodness. I get him home. I strip him naked. I rinse him off. I get everybody settled down. I'm like, well, at least Kentucky has got to be making this a game. I turn it on. I accidentally, I go to start live. It from where it was. It went live. And I literally just put my face in my poop hands and was just devastated. I got shit on, and Kentucky got shit on. And that's what happened.
Well,
that was my Halloween. That was my Kentucky game experience.
Jeff, could you fix it?
I got pooped on. Kentucky got pooped on.
It reminds me of the Triumph the Comet Dog. To poop on. You ready to spin around the league?
Let's do it.
Let's get the spin on this week's SEC matchups.
All right, this week we have Mississippi State at Missouri, Kentucky at Georgia. Already referenced that game. The University of Vanderbilt at Florida. Arkansas at Ole Miss, South Carolina at Tennessee, Auburn at Texas A&M, and then the granddaddy of them all, Week 10, Louisiana State University, Les Miles and those crazy Tigers are heading to Tuscaloosa to face Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Elephant Heads. I've never understood the. I think I've read it. I don't know what the elephant means. So where do you want to pick it up? Let's. How about we go with? Let me just pick one at random here. LSU at Alabama. Let's start there.
LSU. I think the only team in the country right now that could really play, that could shut down Leonard Fournette in the LSU running game, I think, is Alabama. However, like I said, I think this LSU team is better than that 2011 LSU team that went in Tuscaloosa and beat the eventual national champion. I think Alabama has everything they need this year to win a national championship. Problem is that Ole Miss game is going to come back to bite them. I think LSU goes into Tuscaloosa, and I think they win a close one. I think Brandon Harris makes the small plays that he needs to make. And Leonard Fournette's the best player in the country. There's hands down, he's the best player in the country.
How similar are these teams?
Extremely, extremely. I would actually give the edge to Coker, and I don't think Derrick Henry is really that far behind Fournette.
Defenses are against the run. LSU a little bit better against the pass, but Alabama has gotten better.
Right. I think that Fournette is such a force that everybody gets caught up and want to stop him. Right. And when you're playing Alabama, when you go to stop Fournette, Brandon Harris just makes the play that kills you. You know, he makes the one or two plays that kill you. You know, when you're playing Alabama, you know you got to account for Coker. You know you got to account for Henry. And there's not really that one play that breaks your back, I feel like. With LSU, there's that play that breaks your back, because as soon as Brandon Harris makes that play, you start accounting for it. And guess who then runs around the backside? Leonard Fournette, and he goes for a touchdown. I don't think LSU is as balanced on offense as Alabama is, nor do I really think they're as good overall as Alabama on offense. I just think LSU gets the job done in a different way, and they're better than that team. Well, I keep coming back to that, but they're better than that team was in 2011. I think their defense, though, is more balanced than Alabama's is.
Yeah, I agree that Henry's in a little bit behind Fournette. They're both extraordinary. Yeah. With Chubb out, you know, we had the three-headed monster there in the conference with Chubb, with Henry, and with Fournette. Here's the difference, I think. You have to game plan Fournette. So he gets a lot of attention. With Henry, I think you know he's good. I don't know that LSU defense just needs to play the run well to contain Derrick Henry. Well, I don't think that same rule applies to Fournette. You've got to spy him. You've got to devote players to him. You've got to be sure you take him out. That may be a difference in this.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Like, you're right on the money, because Derrick Henry, you know he's running a lot up the middle. He's between the tackles. Fournette will run you over between the tackles. He'll also outrun you outside. He can also catch the ball out of the backfield. Derrick Henry, it's not that he can't. He just doesn't do it very much. Nick Saban has different packages for different running backs. Fournette is Les Miles' guy. I mean, Miles is going to win or lose the national championship this year with Fournette. I mean, he's putting it on his back. We saw last year against that Notre Dame defense, that run he had up the middle to the house. I mean, when does that happen? When do you just hand the ball off to a guy and he runs up the middle 80 yards for a touchdown? But the thing about Fournette is he can do it at all. He can run you over. He can outrun you. Henry is more of a power back, which is typical of Alabama. And like you said, if you just play decent run defense, you're not going to lose the game to Derrick Henry. If you don't completely game plan and go all out for Leonard Fournette, you're going to lose. I mean, he's going to find a way to beat you. And I think that's why he is the best player in the country right now.
Does this at some level come down to Brandon Harris then? Brandon Harris, he does not have to win the game.
But he can't lose the game.
Well, I wouldn't say that I think you put it best. I wouldn't say that he can't lose the game. I would say he has to do a few little things well and not make any mistakes. So it's kind of in between those two positions.
Here's what I need from Brandon Harris. I need 150 yards passing, one touchdown, no picks. That's what I need from Brandon Harris to win the game. I'm not asking him to go out and throw for 300 yards. I'm asking him to make a couple throws here and there, some rollouts, because Les Miles has done a really good job with rolling him out, giving that run-pass option. I'm not even going to say 150 yards passing. I'm going to say 150 yards total, whether it's running out of a rollout or throwing, and in a account for one touchdown, passing or rushing. That's all I need from Brandon Harris. No turnovers.
Does he have that in him?
I think he does. He's proven it.
I think Coker can't get lost in this either. Coker throws a great deep ball. And Kiffin, for whatever his faults are, he does a good job of finding one-on-one situations for Coker a couple of times a game to get a guy, Yeldon, to get one of those guys long.
But he can't. But neither one of them can get caught up into trying to make that deep play happen too often. They're going to have one or two shots to really get that done. LSU's going to be ready for that. I mean, they know that Kiffin, you can tee off on Kiffin. I mean, he's going to go for it here and there. They're going to have one or two good shots that they can probably catch LSU off guard. They've got to make that count. And they just can't be going for it every possession.
Do you know if LSU plays more cover one or cover two?
Les Miles is typically a cover two guy.
So that gives you, I mean, that gives more opportunity downfield because cover one, you got the one over the top. Right. So, you know, you could have a couple of shots there, but I really like LSU's secondary.
I do too.
All right, next game up here, let's go with Arkansas at Ole Miss. You give Arkansas much of a chance here with Ole Miss. Hugh Freeze has probably got them believing again. Arkansas got a little momentum.
I'm not going to say that Arkansas doesn't have a chance. I just think Ole Miss is going to win this game, and I think they're going to end up kind of running away a little bit with it when it all by the end of the game. Arkansas just gives up a lot of points to some crappy teams. And Ole Miss is not a crappy team by any means. So I think Ole Miss ends up, you know, putting a lot of points on the board. You know, I think Arkansas kind of plays good here and there when they want to. And when they get, you know, if they go into Tennessee and beat Tennessee, Tennessee then turns around and lays a smack down on everybody else. I mean, it's just a weird dynamic with Arkansas. I just don't see them going into Ole Miss and winning that game. I think Hugh Freeze is that much of a better coach than Bulema is.
And Ole Miss is good.
They
had a spell there, and the Memphis loss looked weird, but now Memphis is finding themselves in the top 20, and they may be as high as 15 or 16. You know, they're pretty decent quarterback, and that coach is probably going to be a commodity in the offseason. Kentucky at Georgia, any additional thoughts there?
I guess people will probably get tired of me saying this. Actually, Memphis is 13, by the way.
There you go.
People probably get tired of me saying this. If there's ever a team in the SEC East that Kentucky shouldn't play good against, that they typically play good against, is Georgia. I mean, they went to Georgia in 2009 when they had nobody on that team except for Randall Cobb, and they went in there and they won the game at Georgia. I'm not saying Kentucky's going to go in there and win, but the way Georgia is playing right now, and if they're going to play that third-string quarterback again, I'm not going to be that terribly surprised if Kentucky wins the game.
Wow!
And then at that point, Rick is probably done, and there's no doubt about it. However, Rick can also rally the troops and blow Kentucky out. I just don't see that scenario playing out. And I'm not saying I think Kentucky's going to go in there and win, but it wouldn't shock me if that happened. Just the way that it's all playing out now, I just think Georgia looks bad. I mean, they look really bad. They've scored 12 points in two games against Mizzou and Florida. 12 points. That's bad.
And one of those was a home game. You could say they both were home games. Jacksonville's not that far from there. I mean, it's going to be a 50-50 crowd there. It's certainly not away.
Well, you scored 9 points against Missouri, and it came down to a game-winning field goal.
Missouri's defense is good. I mean, but yeah.
You were picked to go to the national,
and not the SEC East, but the SEC Championship, and there's a big difference there.
Yeah.
Big difference between winning the East and the SEC Championship.
Yeah, because you got to beat that team from the West.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to pick. I mean, it would be real hard to pick Kentucky in this game. You know, Towles, for everything that works against him, can also work for him. You know, he reminds me of a poor man's Rex Grossman. Just wing it downfield and hope for the best.
Yeah. you just make eye contact with the guy and fire it to him. I mean, that's really what it is.
I mean, it could snowball on Georgia with a player like Towles. Now, he could throw four picks and, you know, he could be, you know, what, 9 of 13 for 120 and 3 interceptions, or he could throw for 350 yards
And if Toles gets the passing game going, and then he can, because Toles is actually a pretty decent scrambler. Mm-hmm. If he can get the passing game going and then scramble on some draws, George is in trouble.
Auburn at Texas A&M.
I just I think Texas A&M is going to end up blowing Auburn out. Auburn's defense, and I think Muschamp just needs some time to get his players in there to fit his scheme. But Texas A&M is going to basically going to run them out just like they did last year. And I just don't see a scenario that Auburn goes in there and competes. They competed at home against Ole Miss, but I mean, you really think Ole Miss cared much about going into Auburn and beating them? I know it's been a while since they beat them there, but I mean we know the story's out on Auburn. I mean they are like we just talked about. They may not make a bowl game, and I don't even think they will. There's no way that A&M loses this game.
I agree with that. And then lastly, South Carolina, Tennessee. We've touched on this game a little bit already. But Tennessee wins here. They position themselves play for second place in the SEC East with that win against Georgia.
I think Tennessee blows South Carolina out here, and that's no disrespect to South Carolina, but I mean let's just be honest. South Carolina just doesn't have a whole lot going for them right now, and Tennessee has Tennessee is the team right now in the SEC outside LSU and Alabama that you do not want to play. I don't see any team. I think if you're Clemson, Ohio State, Baylor, Notre Dame, I don't think you want to play Tennessee. We know you don't want to play LSU and Alabama. You definitely don't want to play Tennessee because they're kind of firing on all cylinders right now. However they flipped a switch, I guess give credit to Butch Jones, but they are literally firing on all cylinders, defense and offense. I don't think you want to play them at all.
They just had to learn how to win.
Yeah.
And that means that game at Missouri is the only thing between them and winning this out, becoming bowl eligible. And that would be – I think that would put them second in the SEC East, which Absolutely. Is – it's about where we put them. I mean, you and I preseason, we Georgia, put them at Tennessee.
Yeah.
So – and I don't – I mean, my goodness. I guess we'll learn our lesson about Georgia, but who knew? But good for them. And then the only other game on tap this week is Mississippi State at Missouri. We've already talked about that somewhat. We think Prescott's going to have a big game, even against Missouri's defense. He's just that good. He's the forgotten guy with the running backs and the seasons they're having. We forget that that Prescott, I don't know where he ended up the season last year in the Heisman voting, but he was a candidate through at least three-fourths of the season.
Well, Mississippi State, I mean, don't forget, they're number 20 in this ranking. So, I mean, they're in the top 20 in the rankings. And I don't see Mississippi State could – I think they're going to end at 9-3.
All right, Jay, moment of truth, LSU or Alabama? This is it.
LSU.
You're going LSU?
I'm going LSU.
I want to go LSU really bad. Alabama's burnt me so bad in the past. I'm going to stick with the Crimson Tide. I think the home team, I think they'll find a way to slow Fournette down, and I like Coker. I don't think Harris has it in him, but we'll see. So you're going to LSU, I'll go Alabama. Jay, that's going to wrap it up for Episode 9.
Yep. Good show. I think LSU's going to do it, though. This is the SEC championship right here.
It's the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
It's the SEC Super Bowl. Look forward to being with you guys next week where I'm sure we'll have some great reactions to some of these Week 10 games. Thanks for being with us. Like us on Facebook.
Drop the gun.